Hi, my name's Sean Shaler. That guy over there is my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the Objective Geek of Planet Comic-Con fame, because in the relative bucket of
yes,
Planet
absolutely.
Comic-Con, we're not semi-famous, Chris. We pull, Jake. wildly inappropriate usage, good context, bad usage. Pull one thing in particular. Anyways, we will be at Planet Comic Con this year, and that feels like a good intro, and I'm actually bringing it up mostly because I don't want to forget later. Chris did the application like he does every year, and then we wait in limbo for months or weeks.
Last year they were great. They were on top of their stuff. They said put in your applications this day, like by November 30th or something. You will hear back by this day. Heard back before that day, which is great. I like, cool. They are on top of their stuff. This year, they were just a little different. But the year before that, I didn't know we got confirmed for the con until they released the panels to the public. Like, they never confirmed that we were okay with those time and day that they sent us. That they were just like, here, you're either gonna do it or you're not gonna do it. Like, all right.
It's like getting the roster posted on the wall in Mighty Ducks 3. Is like you just pin the paper and then leave with no accountability. What a lame. Anyway, Chris, tell me about our panel, about the con. Who are you excited to see? The panels. I mean, you already spoiled it for me a little bit. The panels you want to go to. Tell me your con expectations and plans.
I honestly don't have much expectations this time around, unless they. I don't know the panels yet. They won't release those for another month. But the guests so far, I'll say this. So far, they have great guests. They have Carl Urban. That's probably their biggest one. They have a lot of live action actors.
Carl Urban of Dread and Xena Warrior Princess fame. Fun fact. Yeah. One episode, I think.
Yeah, my favorite roles of his is probably Star Trek, just because I love that movie.
Okay.
Also from The Boys.
I haven't tried The Boys yet. Do I need... I think I'm a little burnt out on, honestly, like, the R-rated stuff.
I am, too. I am... I don't know, because I'm just, like, because I lean more towards those hopeful, optimistic archetypes. And Batman, hopeful, not... He is... Batman is hopeful and optimistic, but in a different way. But
it manifests differently.
Yeah. And yeah, than Superman. But like, I don't know. I'm not that into the let's take superheroes and bring them into the real gritty world. I'm not even talking about Snyder. Man of Steel, I think I love Man of Steel. I think it's a very great film. The best Superman film. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, no, let's bring really into our real world. Cause our real, not even to the real world. Cause our,
let's make them pay taxes. Crappy. And let's,
like, let's do it
socialize.
Through the grimy lens of just, like, rated R and like, pessimism. And there's no good guys. And, like, I'm into good guys. I like good guys. I like that. So, The Boys, I may get back into it. I kind of dropped it after season 2 or 3, and I think it's been maybe 2 seasons since. But I may watch this because I know the next season is going to be the final season, and so I like a sense of finality. But yeah, anyway.
Is Jason Isaacs the only Avatar name present? The only big Avatar name present?
Yes. So he may be the only one that I'm like, if his line isn't long, then I might just go get the poster signed.
Okay. It looks like a couple of X-Men people. Ernie Hudson, who plays the dad in one season of Psych. I like that show. Keith David from other
Keith David. Thing is, I'm a big, sounds weird. I'm a big fan of Keith David as, like, an actor and a voice actor, But it's not like a single role that I'm like, oh, I just love. Like, I just love him in that role, and I want him to sign something for me in that role. But, like, I just appreciate his acting all the time, no matter what he's in. He has such a great voice. He voiced Goliath. Oh, actually, I have a Goliath action figure over here.
Gargoyles.
Even though I wasn't that in Gargoyles.
Gargoyles are primed for action figures, man. That's, like, in...
Yeah, oh, it's...
It's a shame that I think there's only like one Gargoyles video game that I can think of, at least, because what a franchise that's like screaming
it is,
for a good video game.
It is a really great action.
Yeah, he looks
honestly
he looks
like
tremendous.
Like I said, I'm not even a big fan of Gargoyles. Like I watch episodes and stuff, but like that trigger was so cool. I was like, oh, I need to buy it, even though it's falling apart in my arms.
I wouldn't say I'm a big fan. I'd say I'm a fan. You know. And he's what's the villain's name in Princess and the Frog? What is his name?
I
just think of him as the Voodoo Man, but he's got a name.
I just call him, well, because that's what Tiana calls him. The Voodoo
Is that
Man.
All it is? The Voodoo
so
Man.
I call him the Voodoo Man.
Maybe he doesn't have a
name. No, he has like a very fancy name, like something French.
Of course it would be French. Of course it'd be French.
Oh yeah, but man, Are You Ready? That's a great song. Mm-hmm. He does it. Great job in that. And then,
we just got done complaining about the lack of great 2D animation. And is that the last great Disney
that is,
2D
it
animation?
Was, yes. Yeah, they, in fact, I remember watching Disney Channel at that time, and they talked a lot about how it was 2D. Yeah, that was the last great 2D animated film from Disney, at least.
Couple of other notes. Well, oh, sorry. And I have to say my favorite thing that Keith David is in is probably Princess and the Frog or just Community, even though that's not a great season. It's better than the fifth or the fourth season, so I'll give it that. And
I think it's better than one of them. I remember.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Oh, I'll just say I think it's better than maybe just one of those seasons.
It's.
But... Or is it...
four?
Yeah, I can't
whichever
remember.
One cuts off really, really abruptly with the bad paintball episode. That's not really paintball. It's the evil.
Yeah.
The evil. That one is the worst season. I think that's
five. I agree.
I think it's five.
Might be four.
Because four is the gas leak season, but that's the one we both say really isn't that bad.
Okay. Okay.
And then five okay. is okay. the one that's odd. But I could be. I might have to look it up. I might be mistaken.
You might be right.
And then Elijah Wood is there. I do love Lord of the Rings, but like not other particular draw to Elijah Jesus. Wood. It's weird that like Iron Maiden, the drummer and the singer, like I like Iron Maiden well enough, but like is that normal for just musical guests to be there? That doesn't feel normal to me. Maybe it is.
I'm going to say they do like maybe one a year.
Okay. All right, well, Iron Maiden, if you're into that. And then, Chris, somebody I didn't know how much you cared about or not, but Chris Claremont is essentially like the X-Men guy, right? At least as far as bringing them into as we know them.
Yeah, I won't have to meet him, but he wrote the best X-Men comic, I think, called God Loves, Man Kills. That's a really great read. Really good read.
That's probably the one where I might wind up standing in line for a buddy who can't make it, depending on how the line looks. Chris Claremont,
oh,
very important.
I thought he was asking for Famke Jensen.
Which one is that?
She plays Jean Grey in the original X-Men.
Oh,
movies.
Attractive lady. Yeah, yeah. She has a name. I'm just being mean. Yeah, okay. Maybe he said he'd send over a couple of names and figure out how much money he wanted to send or whatever. But I think Chris Claremont's he's an actual, physical comics guy. So I'll see how the line is.
Oh, okay.
We'll see.
It probably won't be that long, honestly. And then there is a Carl Lumbly. He was in. I know him most from the Justice League. Cartoon. He voices Martian Manhunter and does a really great job there. I probably won't get. I should have planned this out more. I probably won't get his sign because I didn't get. I got my Wonder Woman statue signed. I'm pointing over there. You can't see him.
That one. Yeah.
Eight Yeah. I got my Wonder Woman signed by Susan Eisenberg, and I got my Green Lantern one signed by, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name. He's a terrific voice actor, one of the best. Oh my gosh. I'm so mad. I'm forgetting his name. I'm not forgetting his name. He actually does a voice in Avatar. His signature isn't a real thing.
And
he voiced the Samurai Jack.
No, well, now I got to. So, I have no idea, but I got to Google it. Samurai Jack voice actor.
He also plays Futurama. The black guy in Futurama. He voices him too.
Phil Lamar, which I did not know the Futurama thing, but that's
Phil Lamar. He also voices the Static.
Who's he voice in Avatar?
He voices the Earth King.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. I wonder if any Earth King lines will make our list later.
I probably won't get Carl Lumley's autograph for that because I never got Kevin Conroy's. I was going to, 1 year he was supposed to come and he had to cancel. I think they might say just scheduling reasons, but even at that time I was like, no, I hope he's not sick. And then unfortunately he did in the past way. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get Hawk Girls, even though she was really cool. She was great. And Sean, you snuck up on her. And me, John, was like, no, John, don't. But
I'm shameless.
I didn't get her autograph, so it would be incomplete anyway. And I'm fine. I'm fine not meeting anyone. I'll just go, and I won't be there as long, probably, as normal, which is fine. Because Comic-Con can be a long day. And even longer, because when and if, and probably, we have our panel, it will be late in the day.
That was the most conditional statement of all time. It's a when and if and probably.
It really was. It's like writing a sequel script.
Oh, jeez. Chris, what time will possibly it be at, probably?
Probably sometime between, it will probably start sometime between 6:59 and 7:01. Cool. If I had to guess.
Cool, cool. Are you bringing the kids? Bringing Mackenzie?
Yeah, probably just her, because she just likes to come and won't get a free ticket. So
sweet.
I gotta ask John if he's coming.
I will probably, I don't know, we'll see how it works out. I figure I'll still make a full day of it. I've never gone and gone in and then just left for like a big chunk of time to like eat somewhere fun downtown, because I'm never downtown. It's like 25 minutes away. I never go there because I don't like traffic. Every time I drive in traffic, I get upset at humanity. So it's like, I might still just go for a full day and just like leave and go sit and watch basketball and eat food at a restaurant or so. I don't know. I haven't thought about it much.
Okay. But
anyway, Chris, I'm going to use Jason.
I am on the lookout for a replica Master Sword. I want a real like metal Master Sword. Venture Stock has a couple for sale, but there's like few things wrong with each of them. Later, I'm like, that's not how the Master Sword looks. And so in the places to sell swords, I'm looking for one of those, spend maybe, you know, like $150 maybe.
The Master Sword is cool in that it's generally kept a pretty similar appearance for, I don't know, it feels like a couple decades. After we're done here, I might, out of curiosity, just go look like Master Sword game by game and see when did it become the Master Sword it is today. Like probably Ocarina is my guess.
So Ocarina's is like, it's almost kind of like a, well, it depends. In the game, I believe it's like it's more grayish. But like in advertisement material and stuff, it is more purplish blue. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think it had there's like a little diamond, yellow diamond in it. It didn't have that, the yellow diamond in the hilt of it
in the game,
but until Skyward Sword, yeah, in the game, and also, or maybe it did have the diamond, but like the diamond, I don't know, the hilt changed. Okay. But the Master has pretty much, I think, been the same since Skyward Sword. Like, even the hand part that has, like, a thread around it, a green thread. I think since Skyward Sword, it's been pretty much the same.
Just out of curiosity, I might go look that up when we're done, because that sounds fun. And there's always, like, a 45-minute period while I'm just waiting on a video to render before I go to bed, where I learn interesting tidbits about whatever it is we talked about this particular episode. Chris, I'm going to use... We only mentioned Jason Isaacs for like half a second, so he's going to be my segue into our topic. And that's Jason Isaacs is also going to be there. And that is Malfoy. That's Lucius Malfoy. And it's Admiral Zhao. And he voices Admiral Zhao. And that's my lazy segue to our today's topic, in which we are ranking, each of us, separately, independently, our top five voice acted lines. There's a better way to describe that, Chris. Top five
scenes. Voice actors. We're not ranking the voice actors themselves. We're just ranking the best acting performances.
I want to clarify,
and because
also,
it's all voice acting.
Not that we're not ranking the dialogue either. We're not ranking the writing, because we're not ranking the voice actors. We're ranking the best and best overall marriage of those two things.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how we're going to call it. Best voice acting moments / lines / scenes.
Yeah. Yes. From just Avatar. We'll do Korra probably in about 3 weeks, maybe.
And maybe someday we'll do just like actual voice actors. That could be fun. You brought that up as an idea that I think sounds interesting. Ah, you know, I didn't know Carl Urban was the Rohirrim guy from Lord of the Rings. That's interesting. And looks different. We will, Chris, you'll start first with your number five, and we'll snake back and forth. And then, as always, we'll have probably way too many honorable mentions after we're done.
All right. My number five I understand that I'm biased probably in this selection because I'm a huge Batman fan, and my biggest drop in the Batman universe was Batman the Animated Series, and the voice of the Joker is done by Mark Hamill, and my number five on here is the Agni Kai between Ozai and Zuko, the one that burnt his face. Mark Hamill is just like, so he's not Joker, but you can hear a little bit of it in there. Such a good voice actor. Mm-hmm. But just the, you will learn respect, and suffering will be your teacher. Like, oh my gosh, that's so freaking good. Love his delivery. And also, I've quoted that so many times. And it's not that I quote it because it's such... It is a good line, but it's the delivery. Like, I don't remember... Like, you know, shout out to the live action... oh my gosh, I am blanking on names. My memory is getting really bad.
Daniel
Day-Kim. I don't think he had that line. Even so, he wouldn't deliver it the way that Mark Hamill did.
He wouldn't do it right. It'd probably be fine, but it would be great.
Love that. And Zuko did, and Dr. Bosco did a great job too in that scene as well. Just like father, like so repentive and so
remorseful,
so kind of innocent.
Yeah,
yeah.
Two things I want to say before I get my number five about my list as a whole. One, I did not limit myself to like one appearance per character, but I tried to because I'm partial to certain voice actors and I just fill the whole list. And then two, I tried really hard to ask myself, like, where were those moments where you forget that there's somebody else that's like recording this voice in a room somewhere and that it's not actually just like coming out of these 2D animations faces somehow. Those moments, because that's what tells me that it's like, That it feels real, right? And so those were my two things that I asked myself. And my number five is a great example, is Sokka and Toph when they're talking to each other about Katara. And Sokka in particular, not that Toph is bad, but Sokka in particular, it feels like Jack DeSena is family with Mae Whitman. It feels like he's talking about his own life in the most genuine way. And I don't know how else to describe it other than it. If you didn't know any better, like, you'd be like, "Are they? Is he talking? Is he like relating a real story in real life that just happens to fit right here?" It's so organic, and it's touching. But he has to. It has to be touching. He also has to be in a way that he's delivering as a kid to a younger kid, you know. And it just that's really tricky. And they crush it, especially Jack. That's my number five.
Yeah. To piggyback off that, that is my number four. Yeah, it is
beautiful.
Ah, man, they say some of the best comedic actors play the best serious roles, or have that capability in them. And I forget why people say that's the case. Maybe because they're like, well, comedy is like.
Is it just because it takes good acting to be a comic? Like, maybe they're looking at it backwards, kind of. You know.
But maybe this part stands out because Jack DeSena Asaka is most of the time comedic. Even in the parts where it's like it's action and stuff and then things are serious, he's mostly comedic or a little bit more lighter. And this is like, no, he's going to be full sincere. Like Sokka calls himself the guy of meat and sarcasm. And there's no sarcasm here, just full sincerity of like, and he delivers it so well. He's like, you know, I don't even know what my mom looks like anymore. When I try and imagine her in my head, the only face I see is Katara's. Like, oh, like,
just,
yeah, they
just
feel like
repeating that line makes me want to just like tear up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? It's great. I'm gonna
cheat. One of the well-written lines do have.
Yeah. I'm going to cheat just a little bit and say that one of my honorable mentions, too, was Sokka said, I don't think Boomerang's coming back for, like, the same reason, although, one of my honorable mentions. So I was like, oh, it's Toph and Sokka again, and it's a similar but less, a little less good delivery example.
Yeah. And Michaela Jill Murphy also does a great job in that.
Always, yeah.
Really, I think these are two characters who are not often these two characters that they're portraying on the edge of this cliff side. Like, they're both usually wham bam or comedic, and so she gets to be very genuine in a moment of like, you know, Katara cares about me more than my own parents. Like, she likes me for me. That part right there, I think, really sung true.
And I think the fact that it's out of character makes it feel in character. It makes it feel more real. Like, if you know, if you and I suddenly had to shift tones pretty drastically from our norm, kind of suggests like, hey, this is important enough that we have to do this. You know, so like it sells in character too. I love it. I love it. It's a beautiful moment. My number four is Iroh and Zhao's exchange about the fish. And so the easy one is Iroh saying, you know, whatever you do to that fish, I'll do you tenfold, because he's giving you that little spicy reminder. That he's, you know, he's the dragon of the West. He's a powerful person. So that's like a break from his normal, like, character, the intensity behind it. But it hits. It feels real. It, like, makes you scared of Iroh for a second. And then on the flip side, Jason Isaacs, portrayal of Zhao is, like, the pinnacle of, like, cool evil. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he does not care. He's going to do it anyway. And he keeps it really, like, I'm going to say, like, straight-laced, even in the face of Iroh's threats, et cetera. And it's a really cool exchange of two characters that point in the show, like, what an interesting crux of that relationship at that point in the show. They both do great. Iroh obviously kind of carries the weight a little bit, which is fine.
Yeah. It is. One thing about Jason Isaacs is that, you know, if you do watch it back, he does feel like he is playing, and it's probably to his like training and on-screen stuff, but he does kind of feel like he is portraying like a more, not Shakespearean, but a more higher level of acting.
But maybe he's a little more steady. Like, there's like a theater stageness to the character, not just to his voice acting, but to the character.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like subtleness in it. Like, he's not, you know, up and down. Like, he's pretty
It's cool, man.
Even stuff, but yeah.
That's kind of his, what he typecast, like in all of his stuff, is a little bit that way, but hey, he's good at it.
Yeah.
Chris, I think I want you to do your three first, because I think I want you to lead with your one when we come to that. So hit me with your three.
Although I just changed my one from what you... I changed my one. You said something while you were talking about your thing. I was like, you know what? Sean's right.
Okay, I'll give
Anyway.
I'll give my three, then I'll give my three. Ozai, I was torn, again, kind of giving away some honorable mentions, but I was torn between Agni Kai, Don't You Want to Know What Happened to Your Mother, and what I chose is Now the Universe Delivers You to Me as an Act of Providence. You can go any of these, and Mark Hamill, all the things that you just said that I'm not going to repeat, Mark Hamill is great. That's what it boils down to. Ozai is a limited character, and as we have discussed, he's kind of a flat villain. Mark Hamill's portrayal is like the only thing that gives him life. Like when he's on the screen, he commands the screen because of Mark Hamill's voice acting. And that's the part that sticks with you and like looms over you the vast majority of the time when he's not on the screen. It's because of good dialogue writing, of course, and Mark Hamill's great delivery. And I think The Universe Delivers You to Me as an Act of Providence. That's like Ozai in a nutshell, right? Like that thinking that the world belongs. That's a good, but any of those. You can pick any of those. Hamill crushes it. And spoiler alert for the favorite actors list that we'll do someday, I guess. Or favorite voice actors. That's my three.
Yeah, when I was thinking of this list, I didn't think about those other two moments of Don't You Want to Know What Happened to Your Mother.
There's a lot tied into that one right there. Chris, I will allow us to put all those into one group in our ranking. I'll allow it.
Yeah. And then the act of, and it's truly an act of, it's Mark Hamill, such a freaking good actor. Man.
Mm-hmm.
He's that one to me is those two, the Don't You Want to Know What Happened to Your Mother and, truly an act of providence are, they're, peak villain delivery.
And they're not,
it's not,
they're not crazy. He's not yelling. He's not exerting force. Yeah. They're just they're just kind of simple, quote unquote, deliveries, but he adds so many layers to them.
Yeah.
Gosh. So good.
Hamill.
So good. I don't know how I'm thinking about, I need to re-rank and put that one higher.
If Planet Comic Con ever gives Mark Hamill, I'm like, listen, we got to get there early. I don't even know if I was Trump. I might just buy the pass or something. But you know what? Screw it.
I've always stood in line with you. I'll get the fast pass when Mark Hamill comes, and you can stay in line with me and get the double sign. We'll do that.
Yeah.
I owe you some line visits. What a great guess, though. I think he would, obviously, that would be a wild appearance.
Just Luke Skywalker. If he only ever did that,
he would still be.
But it had to do with the Joker, and then all his various other roles. While we're just fawning over for Ozai,
we're talking over the worst villain, the show. or even he does lots of cameos and stuff, so people wouldn't know him from the cameos, but he has a way of, it's 7 degrees of Mark Hamill. You've seen something, you like something that he's been in.
One thing I really love about Mark Hamill is that he's not things aren't beneath him.
Nope.
And that can sound like a backhanded comment to people, but he's I'll go do an episode of The Flash on CW, because he's after Star Wars, he did he was on the 90s Flash show as a villain,
I didn't know existed till right now, so it must be great.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I never actually watched it, to be honest. He came back in the 2010 whatever Flash show and redid that character or a slightly different version of that character. So like Mark Hamill's like always down to like do stuff because he's just like, I just like doing stuff and being in stuff and art and things like that.
That's
so
cool, man.
He's done a couple more stuff recently. He was in I need to watch this Stephen King movie called The Long Walk. Heard it was good. He was in that. And then he was in Netflix series Follow the House of Usher. He's good in that also. Like, and this stuff is a little bit more a little more villainous. So, Mark Hamill. Great actor.
I think as far as my favorite stuff, he does his best work as a villain in my personal scope.
I mean, yeah. I would just be for the Joker, but sure. Then he could sign. I have one thing signed from Kevin Conroy, my DVD.
I know it's weird. Maybe I would make him sign the Arkham City. It's my favorite. Wait,
I would get. Hold gosh, on, wait. How
is
much
there
would
Arkham
an
City
autograph
or Asylum be? Where he's the?
Well, both.
I guess it is both, but a city. He's in both cities. City's the one I prefer. That's right. Okay, I'm.
Oh,
I was getting him flip flop for a second. They're both great.
What up, man?
City's a little... I think City's a little more polished, personally.
Yeah. I'm just thinking what I would get signed by him if I ever met him. Probably the Batman one, because Kevin Conroy's in there.
That feels right.
To me.
That feels right.
Then anything. Because then I probably wouldn't get that signed. That would feel bad, because it would be great.
But you got to stay true to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
all right, number three. I need to look up this actor. Number three is Katara with her dad. I think this is one of the best. Like, two, both of them are doing great. This is in the episode of The Awakening when they're on the boat. Aang goes off. Katara's like complaining about Aang. She's like, doesn't he know that he needs us? Like, we could be helping him, and like. And like, oh my gosh, Mae Whitman is so good as Katara. So good in delivering subtexts of like, I'm talking about Aang, but really I mean about you. And then her dad picks up on that. I was like, you're talking about me, right? And no, he doesn't say that. He's like,
so you said it way cooler
like his
than he says
back,
it. His voice acting is a little stiff, but hers knocks it out of the park.
No, I think he has, and maybe the line is, I'm going to do the voice after some Dakota. I think his delivery of like, I miss you and your brother so much that I would stay up and ache at night. Like, his body ached at night just from missing his kids. His name is, that can't be him, is it? Oh, that guy looks... Oh, I think it's actually Native American. Okay. Name's Joel. I never knew this. His name is Joel Montgrad. But I think he also did a great job there. But man, Mae Whitman does such a great job. I think that's one of the best Katara performances. Like, she's just so vulnerable. And that feels like something real. Like, Mae Whitman had a dad who was a soldier or something and had to go off. Like, she felt that.
The hardest thing I did in this list was, like, spoiler alert, but just because I got to not include that line in my list, unfortunately. That's my number six, if we're going out that far. The realness combined with the hardness of the line to make it feel real, it's fantastic. And then the other, if I was like, because I just, again, I was sort of thinking character by character. I like that one. I love that one. And then another one I really like a lot is I'll Never Turn My Back on People Who Need Me. And I watched them both.
Oh, my gosh. How the heck did I?
Okay, but I pulled
how
them
did
both.
I miss
no, one? No, but you got, hey, that's one, you got yeah. right. I pulled them both up. I watched them side by side. The People Who Need Me one is just like 1% stiffer. It's 1% less believable.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, a literal.
Look, you feel the acting a little more in that
one. And that's it. But I just want to say again, this is my hardest thing I did in this list was that I didn't want to take anything else for that line. That's my number six. It's fantastic. Yeah. How could you leave us, Dad? And you're just like on the other side of the TV crying at the cartoon. My dad didn't even leave me, and I'm crying over here. Call him and get mad at him.
I think it's like she's so... Yeah, it's... I mean, it is... This scene does do... is helped by the great writing.
Sure.
And
sure.
The what we know about the character and the story and stuff, but, like, you feel that she is mad at her dad, but she feels like, I know it doesn't make any sense that I know it's illogical that I am pissed off at my dad for going to go fight in a war to protect us, but I don't, like, but that's my feeling.
But she's a kid.
Like, I can't help but get it off.
And you feel that. You feel that this is a kid fighting complex, very complex situations.
And her the delivery. Line of like, and I know the world, and I know the world needs him, but doesn't he know that I need him too? Like, the writing's good there, and her delivery is great.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's all. It's really well inferred. It's tough to portray a kid portraying emotions, and knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Especially crying. Like, I don't even understand how... I mean, I guess you're just acting in... You probably just have to... I think you just have to do it like you would do it live action. Like, oh, the scene requires me to cry. Okay, let me get in my feelings and cry.
Yeah. I want to come back to that idea when we talk about our honorable mention. To that notion that you're bringing up right there. Are we on your number two?
Mine... Who's ever number two?
You want me to do my number two?
That's, okay. Sure.
Which I forget where we are.
We're on two.
We are two.
You can go. You go.
Okay. Yeah. Fine. I'll go. I think the second hardest thing in the entire series to deliver, the second hardest moment to deliver well, only behind my first moment for what it's trying to deliver and just nailing it, Chris, is Azula crying and getting really insane upset when she gets it's relatively easy to for an actress of Grey Delisle's immense talent to play the other Azula bits, the manipulative the day-to-day kind of crazy parts. That's okay, that's like right up Grey Delisle's wheelhouse. It does great. But this, like, feeling of, again, you're talking about somebody trying to portray a super-powered child being pushed over, like, a wildly complex, wildly specific situation, and it just works. When you're watching the scene, you feel like this is a real child throwing a temper tantrum who just happens to be the most powerful child that you've ever come across and throw lightning bending. It relays agony wildly well, and it feels real. It doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't feel like Gray's just yelling in a booth. It feels like she's actually experiencing the emotion somehow, what she's trying to get across. Kills it.
Yeah, this was in my honorable mentions of her losing that agony cry, of just the, like, this, there's no words even that she's saying. Like, there's no, like, that's a great sign, because, you know, we've talked about how, like, oh, the script is doing a lot.
Because the script is doing a lot. It's great.
Nothing. The script probably just says Azula cries in defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And Grey Delisle takes that and goes, and it's just crying, and it's breathing out fire, and it's desperation, and it's anger, and hatred, and disappointment, like, all in one. I'm just like... And then, like, whoa, she freaking kills that.
I'm going to try to keep this anecdote small, but it's important to me and it sticks with me forever. When I saw the third Harry Potter film in movie theaters, we were walking out of the theater, and I was thinking to myself actively, Chris, of, like, hey, that was pretty good, but that lady who played Professor Trelawney was, like a little hammy. Like, it was a little over the top, even for a Harry Potter movie. And, like, that instant, somebody behind me was talking about how good she did at portraying a crazy lady, and I'm like, anyone can just, like, be a little over the top with their dialogue. No. Great actors, they sell it. And this Gray sold this, and it's got to be one of the hardest bits of the show to nail, in my opinion. That's my number two.
Yeah.
was like 12-year-old Sean or whatever, just like, what the hell is that lady talking about? This is horrible.
That's funny.
I couldn't say it out loud. I was a child.
My number two might be controversial. Number two, I think it's controversial to me because I just switched it when we were recording.
Inner controversy.
And it is inner controversy. It is Mako as Iroh in Leaves from the Vine. It's a gosh, just one thing, he's singing, and so that's another level.
Extra
but
layer.
just the sincerity of it, just the if only I could have helped you. Like it's subtle enough, and it's not like he's not like drowning in his emotion, but he's still emotional. And then the singing Leaves from a Vine. He sings the whole thing, and then he cries a little after it. So good. It's funny hearing the background, the little bit of behind the scenes story on it. I believe from Michael Dante said like Mako didn't want to sing. It's not that he didn't want to sing. He was worried about singing. He was more worried about singing than like anything else he's ever done in the show. And man, that so good.
I'm gonna tack on because this is my number one, so I'll just get that out of it. This is my number one, and I did let context affect a little bit, but that's not the most. The most important thing is exactly how you described of the way that like the simple. It's a good simple delivery. It seems simple, but how it delivers layers. How the whole scene delivers such complex layers and an absolute, like, all your feelings actively fighting against each other. But Iroh doesn't lose his cool. He doesn't come overcome. You still feel the pain, right? Even with just the little bitty, the little bitty scratchy tears at the end, you still feel like the whole pain just from the effective, timely delivery. And I don't know how else you would do it to deliver it so well. But again, I admit I probably let the larger context impact my feelings.
It's huge, it's huge context around it. But in defense of the scene, like it's almost a context in a vacuum. Like everything else surrounding it has nothing to do with the scene. But then the scene happens. On a somewhat related note, the way he's singing, like he starts off pretty confident, like just leaves from the vine.
It feels casual. And then he gets it feels like you're humming while you're cooking or whatever, right? It feels comfortable.
Yeah, and then he gets to the point where he's like, at the end, he's like, "Little soldier boy," like he can barely kind of get it out. Because by this point he's choked up. He's not singing at that same
pace
cadence as he was. He has to like slow up to almost catch himself. And that's full on Mako right there.
It's just
Mako
that little,
right there doing
that little choke up though. Is like you go from everything else just kind of being a song and pleasant. This is that little choke up combined with the line. It's weird to think about how much feeling that one little bit delivers all kind of by itself. Well, not really by itself in the context, but just that it hammers home. Yeah. Just a little choking up at the end. He crushed it. I'm glad he did it, and I hope it didn't cause him lots of grief. To sing.
All right. Are we on my number one?
Because that was my number one. Just wanted to tack on at the same time.
What's your number two again?
Azula crying in defeat. The manic, insane Azula.
My number one that I changed in the last minute's number one, because what Sean said, something that changed my mind. Oh, you said about like you forget that there's a voice actor behind there, and that like that's just
it. Just feels like voices are coming out of 2D animation. That's how good it fits.
Yeah. My number one shout out to Dante Bosco. Zuko apologizing to Iroh. It is, he's so freaking good in it. Just the first line of uncle. Like Dante Bosco said uncle so many times, like uncle, uncle, uncle. To be like, there's that, you can hear the frog in his throat, the literal, like, something's in his throat that he is so, like, worried and of what he will say. He's so sincerely apologetic for what happened. This uncle, I'm sorry. And it's just, like, and you can hear, like, a little stutter in it. And, like, granted, this moment probably is very much influenced by the context of it, because this is the culmination of Zuko's character arc and everything, but Dante Bosco, I think, delivered in the perfect moment. And Greg Baldwin, this must have been such a hard scene to film, because this is really, like, one of the first, well, not one of the first, sorry, because Greg Baldwin did do the voice in Saga's Master, but Greg Baldwin came in and did a really great job of, like, you know, I was never angry with you. I was just worried you had lost your way. Like, I did lose my way, Uncle. But you found it. And it brought you here to me. Like, oh my gosh. I know he is doing he's doing a Mako impersonation, but it's great. I think he made it his own. I think it's I think this is two actors who really lock in into these characters. I think those two specifically, I'll probably give the edge to Dante Bosco, are the best performances.
Beautifully stated. I think that's a good segue to honorable mentions.
I forgot to get into our honorable mentions. We had discussed we're going to do honorable mentions like we usually do before number one.
What you just said is a good segue. If you don't mind, Chris, I'm going to go first, just because you'll notice that I don't have any Dante Bosco in my thing, and it's not because I don't think he does a great job. He's an amazing job. We're talking minute percentiles here, but Chris, I watched that scene, and with all due respect to Greg Baldwin, that he does, it's not quite the same. He did a great job. And then also, Dante Bosco, in a scale of all these people playing or portraying kids, there's something about Dante Bosco that just, it's like 0.5% less real. That I feel like I can see Dante Bosco talking just a hair more than I do with some of these other characters with their great delivery. I didn't have him like a number 6 or number 7 or whatever. I love you, Dante Bosco. If you listen, he's going to listen to the podcast for the first time ever. This could be the episode he listens to. He's going to hate me. No, I love him. He does an amazing job. I just am not quite as sold. Teeny tiny bit less by by the storm, by, you know, yelling up into the sky, by apologizing to Iroh, by that's rough, buddy. Anyway, but honorable mention to all those moments and several others, because he does deliver great performances. So that's an honorable mention to Dante Bosco.
You got any other honorable mentions?
Oh, I've got a list, Chris. Do you want to go back and forth? I've got I got a slew.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned before Azula. That was my number 6. That was really close. Mm-hmm. Azula defeated Krang at the end there and breathing fire.
So much fun. So I only had the one Iroh line in there, but I did want to note I guess I had him in there twice because I had him with Zhao. You could do a lot of Mako lines that are just, he feels like uncle. He feels like family when he's on screen. He feels like his love for Zuko always feels real. So you could, any number of his lines could make it, and all would have a great case. That's another honorable mention.
I do want to give a shout out to the voice of Aang, Zach Tyler Eisen. There's a specific moment that I think he probably does his best voice acting is in the Serpent's Pass. The lady has the baby, and Katara's like, "Hey, Aang, come on in." He's like, I've been upset, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you've given me hope. I think that was great acting by him. And he's the youngest one of them all. He's a freaking kid at that point in time.
I hadn't thought of that until I saw it in your original list, and I'm glad you included it, because that's a great moment. I have my honorable mention. There's not a ton of top lines that stood out other than, like, primarily the two with Sokka that we've already been over. But I do like when she's training Aang. I do like when she's trying to instill in him that stubborn, immovableness. And I think that's probably tough to deliver, other than the fact that it's kind of on point with Toph's character. But again, you've kind of selling the idea that, like, yeah, this is a little girl, but translating a pretty powerful message.
Next up, I have Eric Todd Dellums. I had to look up his name. Apologies for that. He is the voice of Ko the Face Stealer, and that's one of those things where just, like, his voice is just so good, and it fits Ko so well. It's like, oh, you come to me with a new face, a younger face. Like, there's that just pure 100% creepiness factor there.
It hits the nail.
He does it. Yeah.
I already kind of mentioned, but several Mae Whitman lines that hit home really well. But I think the dad one probably hits the hardest, and again the Painted Lady one probably the second hardest. But just a shout out to her in general, because a lot of her stuff, again, she feels like a daughter trying to play, or a sister trying to have a mom role, and she just sells it. So plenty of good things, but those two specifically were both, like, in strong consideration.
Yeah. Other moment I had of, do you really think friendships can last over lifetimes? I think this is a good one, because it's like a group effort.
That's a good one.
Had all of Team Avatar, and that one or minus ago. Of, you know, you have Aang saying, like, and you know, talking about Roku's story, like, and I think it was about friendship. And then Toph coming in with a very sincere moment of, like, do you really think friendships can last more than one lifetime? And then I think Aang says, I don't see why not. And then Sokka says, well, technically. And then Katara's like, Sokka, just... I forget what she says. Like, just hold hands or something like that. And then, well, this is not voice acting. This is just pure animation. Sokka, put your hand out, like, kind of with a grumpy face. Sokka, just hold hands. And then Sokka's like, begrudgingly hold hands, and her face turns from a frown from a disgruntled look to a happy smile. So that's not voice acting at all. It's, no, just, you know, pure animation.
That's a great moment. piggyback off that for my last specific one, or kind of specific. Anytime Sokka goes into strategy mode, it's amusing to me, because, again, you've got a character that's primarily comedic relief, but he's trying to find his little niche. But when he, you know, in the air temple, when they're fighting off the Fire Nation, and they're essentially conveying strategy, or up in the, God, every time he does it, I don't know how to describe it other than it feels like it would be really hard for the same voice actor to feel convincing in those moments. And it just does. It makes you feel like, oh yeah, I believe that Sokka can do those things. It's very well sold. You'd probably say that for Jack DeSena might be pretty high on that, like, voice actors list too. I think he just hits Sokka perfectly.
It's gonna be a hard list to make, honestly.
I'm already kind of thinking about it now.
Yeah.
I think that's my last specific one. I think I've kind of given everybody else credit at various points.
Okay. This one is probably the most tertiary character that you will find on this list.
Even though it's on a
mission, is John Polito. Okay, maybe second most.
Okay.
Yeah, good point. John Polito as the chief of the Northern Water Tribe. at the end there where he's like, I think he says, like, I had a dream that my daughter was going to become the moon. And Sokka's like, you must be so proud. And he's like, so proud. And yet so sad. Like, again, it's similar to, it's not like on the same level with the Katara one, but the notion of, I love this person so much that I am saddened that they are doing what they need to do for the world. And I think also as a father, like, man, it's like you're he's proud of his daughter for becoming the moon spirit and stuff. And, but he's also like just so saddened by it. Yeah. Great. Great voice acting. Just those few lines there.
I didn't think of that at all. This is a fantastic tertiary character inclusion.
Yeah. other things, I had Zuko yelling at the sky, and then I think, I think the rest are yours. But how could you leave us, Dad? Oh, that is such a
bad.
How could? Thing is, out of context, that line. Like, if you're just like, let me just pop this line in any other show or something. How could you leave us, Dad? Has way different Will Smith saying to his dad in Fresh Prince, how could you leave me, Dad? Is a whole different thing with the context. Usually that's like a negative aspect of like, oh, you left us. Like, you're deadbeat dad, you left us. And this is like, how could you leave us, Dad? Like, I know we had grand and stuff, but
there's a whole extra layer in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all the honorable mention.
This is the meanest thing I'll say, and I hope they don't watch this podcast. I'm sure they're great, great people, Chris, and I would love to meet them in person and tell them I appreciate their work. But the person who voices Yue and the person who voices Jet might be some of my least favorite voice acting work in this show.
We're really here talking about positive, Sean. Yue is
There's like an overly dramatic theater to her voice that I can't quite put my finger on.
I like it when I think I like her most when it's like smaller. Like when Sokka's like asking her out, and Sokka's like, "Hey, like you can go do some activities," and she's like, "Activities?" And like I think that's good. But then like some of the other moments are. I think she's good. I think she's solid. I'm good with Princess Yue. I'm solid on it.
And then
Jet, you might just have bias against Jet
because Jet sucks first and foremost.
Might be some Jet. Jet does not suck.
He does suck. And then weirdly,
I'm not rolling with that either. I'm not like blown away by any. I think the moment from Jed that I think about most is he is yelling. He's like, "Fire! You think the Fire Nation does this and stuff?" All right, so it might be a little ominous, but no, I've never had any issues with Jed. So I think he delivers the angry, angsty teen / not heartthrob, but
don't you dare, Chris. Don't you dare. And then the other one, this one, I'm just saying because I think it's funny. Startling's not the right word. It catches you off guard to hear George Takei's voice in there. It's not this, like, it's George Takei. But when you're talking about somebody feeling real, as soon as you hear George Takei's voice, you're like, what the hell is George Takei doing here?
My favorite line delivery of his is like, was it a bison or a buffalo? Like, that line delivery, I think, is hilarious. And then the guy's like, well, sir, I don't think it really matters. I'll tell you what matters. And then he throws him off the ship or something. Give me the lieutenant. Or go give me the captain. Sorry, you threw the captain off the ship. Well, give me someone I haven't thrown off the ship.
It's like a hair bison out of... It's jarring. That's the word I'm looking for. It's jarring when you come up to his voice.
Sometimes, you know what? I know that it's kind of taboo to like write stuff or something that's like takes you out of something, takes you out of the immersion. But sometimes it's like, hey, just do it. Just you. If you have this joke that's an inside joke, of the audience and not the people, and that's going to take you out of it, risk it. Risk them getting rid of their immersion just to engage the audience.
I don't even think that it does, that it, like, hurts my immersion a ton, other than just, it does, I guess it does, because it does just, it jars for just for a moment. You're like, what?
Yeah.
What is this?
Is that George Takei?
Is that Dean Cain? Yes. It is. That's actually a really good example of you're just watching a TV show, and you're like.
That's how I was watching I'm currently on a Smallville rewatch, which has been pretty great, to be honest. I've really been enjoying the show. But Dean Cain shows up because they do a lot
of course he does.
Casting of stuff. And I did skip the episode because I skipped it, not because I don't like Dean Cain, whatever Dean Cain's, whoever he is.
Indifferent.
But Smallville is such a long show that when I started off, I was like, all right, I'm just going to watch the episodes that are rated higher, and that wasn't a highly rated episode. I was like, all right, I'll just skip this episode. But I did go, is that Dean Cain? Just for fun.
Yeah, Chris, let yourself have that one. Absolutely. Or like if you're randomly watching all of Xenor Warrior Princess, which I've only done two or three times in my life, and you're like, is that Carl Urban? And it is Carl Urban, just that one time. Come full circle.
It's actually really interesting to watch Smallville, because so many random actors have been on Smallville that are big now. Or, I'm not saying big now, but like they just started in Smallville. Like, speaking of Planet Comic Con, Jason Eccles starred in Smallville, which I think that storyline was kind of pretty creepy, honestly. He was like a 22-year-old dating high schooler, but they didn't really talk about that too much. Yeah, I guess it was a different time then.
Gloss over them.
But
who's Jason Eccles? The name registers, but not.
He voiced, speaking of great voice acting performances, he's voiced Red Hood in that Batman movie, Under the Red Hood. But most people know him from Supernatural.
I have this weird thing with Joseph Gordon-Levitt where he's been in a lot of he's older than us, not a ton, but a little. I think, right? Yeah, he's got to be a little older than us. But he's in a lot of my favorite movies from like genres that like hit the right time of my life. And I'm explaining it poorly, but I love Angels in the Outfield as a kid's movie. It's very touching, good movie. I love 10 Things I Hate About You. I don't even like rom-coms, Chris, but that hit me the right way at the right time. Love 10 Things I Hate About You. The Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, just like he's in. I feel like I've grown up with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah. To start off on Third Rock from the Sun.
Joseph Levitt.
You ever watched that?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah, he was a little kid in it.
Okay. That feels more recent than Angels in the Outfield. I'm only vaguely familiar with Third Rock from the Sun. I can picture the main actor, the bald, older guy. Third Rock from the Sun. What is his name? Oh, yeah, there he is. How about that? Yeah, the only one I could picture. And Stuart, what's his name? Stuart? French Stuart? Yeah. John Lithgow, that's who it is. That's who I was picturing.
John Lithgow.
That's new. And I'm telling you, man, in Angels in the Outfield, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, he's a baby. He's a kid. Anyway, I just one of those, like, every time I see him in any movie, I'm like, that's my boy. That's my buddy.
I honestly didn't even realize I was Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and then that's funny.
What a good movie.
I haven't watched that movie too many times.
First movie that ever made me cry, at least that I can, you know, like remember voluntarily. Ooh. Crying because of an emotion,
yeah.
Not because I'm a baby or some, you know what I mean? Because I had to ask my dad, like, Mel Clark's going to die? And dad's like, he's a fictional.
Why is water coming from my eyes?
How do they know that this guy's going to die? And dad's like, you know, it's not like a real baseball player, right? That helps. All right. Okay. Go on. It's still messed up that in a kids movie, they're like, that Christopher Lloyd's like, yeah, Tony Danza's going to die next year. And I need to tell you that for some reason. Is there a reason for telling him that? What are you getting out of this, Chris Lloyd? Who I think was at Comic-Con last year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe not. Maybe it's a couple years ago. But anyway. Chris, final great voice acting thoughts. Haha, Melon Lord, man. One of the greatest deliveries of the show. Behold.
You know what? You know, I was looking for some, I was looking for more comedic, some of the more comedic ones, because that can be great voice acting as well. Yeah, that's a good one also. I am not tough. I am
Melon Lord.
It's so funny how small things become big, and like, yeah, that has become kind of big in the fandom.
I thought it was funny that it got its own, I mean, lots of stuff got its own avatar card, but that's one of those things, again, just a little bit jarring as I'm like flipping through, you know, a character, that makes sense. Character, that makes sense. Yeah. Melon Lord, an item. Neat.
Before I forget, he might have stopped watching by now. Shout out to Barry and his wife, who had a baby.
Congratulations, Barry. That's fantastic. We brought some Harry Potter into this episode, too. It feels full circle. Huh? Full circle.
I hope he listened to the end of that.
Barry, you've given us hope, to quote Aang talking to another people that had a baby.
Wouldn't that be so funny if he named his daughter Hope? I don't think he did, but...
That actually would be kind of touching, in a way.
Don't feel bad if you didn't name your daughter.
No, you know what? I'm sure feel bad. If you wrote that on a birth certificate...
I'm not sure if it's a daughter. Might not have been a daughter, but I don't know for sure what sets it was.
Did you see it on, but shout out. On Instagram, I think, is where I talked to him. Which
I did see it on Instagram, but my head just can't remember. Or if he did mention if it was a boy or girl or not.
Okay.
But either way, congrats. Congrats to Barry.
Congratulations.
And getting into parenthood.
And name it Hope.
Congrats to his wife as well, who got him an anime. I watched a little bit of one of his recent podcasts with her. They were talking about some anime and stuff, how she got him into anime. And boy, I'd be so crazy if my wife got me an anime.
I can't imagine. Heather's taste, Heather is the perfect wife for me. Her taste in television shows is exactly the opposite of mine, and I don't like
it. Is Heather in the room with us?
No, thankfully, no. No, you know, I would tell her that's not a thing that we like hide from each other. It's like, oh, Heather, you have horrible taste in TV. It's always, always depressing and dramatic, and it's awful, and please don't make me watch it. But she does like sports, and that helps. That helps.
Me and Bob have completely different. She either watches like E Network stuff, like Bravo stuff, like Real Housewives, stuff like that. That she only half watches, or she watches like
it's like your comfort
murder
noise.
Documentaries.
That to her is
or
what
murder documentaries and other First 48, not First 48. Just Prime stuff all the time, and I'm like, I don't like processing those stuff all the time.
Heather's...
I like to live, like I mentioned before, I like to live in an optimistic world.
Yeah, Heather's the crimier, the better. And I'll watch some of those shows, and I'll be like, first of all, there'll be some like big name actors in those shows, which is kind of cool to see, you know, on their way to getting big. And it's like good acting and good budgets, but it's just horrifying people doing horrifying things to each other. Criminal Minds, Bones, Numbers, CSI. One specific CSI she likes more than the others. I can't remember which. Murder documentaries, Unsolved Mysteries, all those. Or like, okay, I say Unsolved Mysteries.
Unsolved Mysteries. Wait. Unsolved Mysteries. Sorry, I'm interrupting. Unsolved Mysteries is an interesting thing you bring up because me and my wife both watched Unsolved Mysteries growing up, right? So if I'm like, oh yeah, I love Unsolved Mysteries. But like, I love the creepy fantasy stuff.
The made up reproductions.
Yeah. Not the actual Unsolved Mysteries of this person got killed and we need to find their murderer. Here's a mugshot depiction of them. I know. I like there's a ghost in our house. Unsolved Mysteries.
I think the only part of those, well, okay, I do enjoy that part, right, with like the horrible reenacting from budget actors, whatever, that's funny. I also like when some of the episodes, like, you know who the murderer is, they just can't say it because there wasn't enough evidence to prosecute in court. You're like, I know you're not allowed to say that guy's a murderer on a TV show, but I don't think you gotta put this one in the unsolved bucket, maybe the unprovable bucket. Yeah. They have a different show that's like, yeah, these guys suck. Don't let them be your friends. Because they will kill you. But nope, the Heather watches depressing things, and but she voluntarily, this is important because some people watch football again just because then she voluntarily just watches any like decent college or NFL football game, and that is that's priceless to me right here. That's worth everything else.
My wife and I do watch football together.
It's a good time, Chris. Someday turn on KU and watch Darren Peterson and hope that he somehow falls to the Lakers, because he won't, but he would make you very happy. I think tonight he averages like a point a minute, which for a college player is asinine. What did he end up with tonight? It was crazy. I know he's the most He's the most gifted, naturally all areas of the floor offensive player in college basketball since maybe Kyrie, which is funny in the sense that Kyrie also had a really weird limited college stint, but when he was in there, just like electric. Just electric. I don't want to say KD. That's too far. That's too far back. Peterson. Hold on. See what he did tonight. It was his first half. He had like 18 points in 12 minutes in the first half. It just didn't even look like he was trying. His true shooting percentage compared to the difficulty of shots and the number of shots he takes is outrageous. Turn on KU one night. Just watch. 23 minutes.
I am all about.
22 minutes. 26 points. 85% field goals against Baylor, who is notoriously like one of the longest and most athletic teams in the best basketball conference in college. Just like nothing. But he's only playing 25 to 30 minutes a game because he has like chronic hamstring issues right now for some reason, which is weird. It's like, whatever, I'll take 20 minutes of that guy. I don't care. Whatever. And then the guy from BYU is very good. Also, anyway, turn on KU one night. See what you think. He's a fun watch. Yeah, we've been recording a really long time. I'm going to watch this screen render for an hour while I look up Master Sword differences, and that's going to be fun. My name's Sean.
Next week, we'll probably review this book here.
Sick
probably do
bookmark,
review
Chris.
This week, and after that.
Sick bookmark.
I was like, I don't even love this car. I was like, oh, I need to grab a car. Yeah. It's just a 4-star.
Sure,
I think it's 1900 attack. Because I needed a car that I was like, I don't really care if this goes missing, but it's kind of cool enough to,
I know Unizombie makes my deck go round, but if I had a bookmark card, it would be Pyramid Turtle, like the OG, the progenitor of the deck.
It's funny. Funny how much more you have just on that game.
I love it.
My phone's about to die.
I love that game. It's so good. If your phone dies, I'll play us out.
I finally found Gravity Bind and Jinzo.
Okay, so now you've got got your build happening. That's good. That's good.
Pretty much, yeah. And I love Guardian Sphinx more than I remember. It's the card that you flip and return the cards to return the monsters to their hand.
Oh, and is it a 3-star or something like that? It was something wonky.
No, well, there was the Penguin Soldier. He was a two or three star.
But you couldn't
flip effect was correct. But Guardian Sphinx is a 5-star, so you have to sacrifice for it. But yeah, you can flip it back once a turn. Now it's a 2400 defense. That was like a pretty good defense.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like kind of just a pain for all right, sure, you can put your monsters out, but
I wish my friends played Yu-Gi-Oh instead of Magic. We used to be a proper country, I say, to a game that's still younger than Magic. Magic's like 30 years old. That's wicked. It's insane to think about.
And then I realized I forgot that Mystical Space Typhoon does not negate stuff.
Oh yeah. And if you have it in your hand, it has to ask at every single action in response, like, do you want to use this? And Chris, that reason alone, I stopped carrying it in my deck because it pissed me off. I stopped using it.
Well, sometimes it asks, like, it's their standby phase. Do you want to do something? I'm like, I don't even think I even can do something right now. Like,
You could drop Mystical Space Typhoon at that point in a phase. You could. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're playing it. I really like it. It's not like it's a good game. It's just the best kind of nostalgia, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I will play, what's the other one? The other Yu-Gi-Oh! Game that came out. It's like a compilation of other Yu-Gi-Oh! Games. I'll probably play that soon. All right.
No, no.
Before Chris's phone dies, I'm Sean. That's Chris. Welcome to Avatar. Welcome. No. Bye from Avatar The Last Podcasters. Thanks for watching. I'll put all the stuff in the description, like always. Come back next week. We'll talk about the book. If you're in Kansas City, come to Planet Comic Con. We'll be there regardless of our panel. Let's point that out.
Not next week.
Not next week. No, I'm just saying we will be there when it happens, regardless of whether or not the panel happens. So if you're going to be there, holler at us. And thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.